Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. This series has been dubbed The Journey to Fertility. One of the bus stops in that journey, and sometimes the last stop, once you get to IVF, is to not get pregnant after all the effort that you put in, that you have a failed cycle. It's heartbreaking to have gone through all the medication, all the stimulation, egg collection, creation of embryos, replacement of embryos, and then 10 or 12 days later to have a negative pregnancy test and a period. It's been called the roller coaster ride of infertility. The problem that we create is an expectation that it will work, a belief that even though the doctor may tell you that the odds of success are only 30 or 40%, you believe that you'll be the person or you'll be the couple in that 30, 40%. But the flip side of that 30 to 40% is that 60 to 70% of cycles will end up not pregnant. And I have to say it's the hardest part of my working day is to sit down in my clinic to talk to patients who entered with great optimism the journey of IVF, and they look at me disappointed, frustrated that they're the ones that haven't been successful. Picking them up, explaining why, is a large part of my day. So let me just go through what I generally say. In nature, in natural conception, there is now very good evidence that embryos are created in more than 50 or 60% of natural cycles. In other words, if you have intercourse at the right time in relation to ovulation, 60% of cycles will have hormonal evidence of pregnancy hormone in the day or two before the expected period. But that 60% falls to real pregnancies in less than 15%. So there's a huge failure in nature of an embryo properly attaching and growing. To get a pregnancy hormone in the blood, an embryo has to have been formed and it has to have attached to the lining of the womb to release hormones into the circulation. Even getting to that point, only one in four embryos will actually go on to produce a pregnancy. So that's nature. Why should we be any better in IVF? We are better, and that's in part because we create multiple eggs. We can see which are the highest quality embryos, and that's what we put back. And therefore, we do better than nature by about a factor of two. you're twice as likely to get pregnant in one cycle of IVF as one cycle of natural conception. So with that background, we ask the question, why is nature so poor? Somehow we've evolved to be producing the majority of our embryos to have chromosomal abnormalities. No one quite knows why we are that inefficient. We're certainly more inefficient than many other animals. Probably why the human has 12 chances a year to get pregnant, because we're actually very inefficient at it. Rabbits, for instance, only come into season maybe twice a year, and they almost 100% produce a litter. So that inefficiency, we believe, is mostly due to embryos with inherent random genetic abnormalities. We always thought that might be the case, but recent technology has really confirmed it. Being able to look at the genetics of a single cell, to look at the chromosome makeup of an embryo based upon taking one cell or a group of three or four cells from the embryo and genetically testing them. And what it's clear is that in a woman of 30, more than 50% of her embryos that we form either in nature, but certainly in the laboratory, contain lethal chromosome abnormalities. And therefore, it's not surprising that success rates are relatively poor. Even more so, as you move to an older mother age, the percentage of normal embryos rapidly declines. So at 40, over 75% of embryos are genetically abnormal. And by 42, it is nearer 95%. So when we create embryos and we don't test them and we put them back, it's easy to see why success rates with IVF, particularly in older women, are so low. That conversation is my standard explanation to patients as to why they haven't been successful. It puts the blame almost wholly on the embryo. But that would assume that if we could test the embryo, and increasingly we are testing embryos, that if we put back a normally formed embryo with normal genetic makeup, we should get 100% success. Sadly, that's not the case. It certainly improves the pregnancy rate. If you put back an embryo that's got normal genetics, instead of being 30 to 40% chance of a pregnancy, it moves it up to 60% chance of a pregnancy. So it certainly improves the odds. But what about the other 40%? We then have to go looking at the mother. Is there something in the mother's system which is preventing pregnancy? Simple testing, looking at the anatomy of the uterus using ultrasound, can reveal fibroids impinging on the uterine cavity, or abnormal shapes where fibrous tissue constitutes a large percentage of the cavity. Those situations are very rare, but can occur. We can look potentially at the mum rejecting the baby through her immune system. This area is very controversial. We do know that some known immune diseases, there's something called systemic lupus erythematosus, which is an autoimmune disease, substantially increases the risk of miscarriage and probably reduces the chances of implantation even before miscarriage. More subtle changes in the immune system have been proposed, and for instance, an elevation of some cells called natural killer cells has been associated with IVF failure. The temptation is to use drugs to suppress the immune system to see whether the mother will accept the baby more readily. This is controversial because perhaps the mother is accepting a pregnancy which is not necessarily a very good pregnancy, and that we're overriding the system. There's also a small question mark on whether prednisolone in the first 3 months of pregnancy is 100% safe. There have been reports of increased risk of cleft palate. That increase is very marginal, but it is probably there. But in the trade-off between having a pregnancy and having what is relatively a minor abnormality, most couples seem to accept taking steroids as being useful if they've been shown to have a potential immune cause. Another reason why pregnancy might not occur, and this is purely theoretical, is in women with an increased tendency for their blood to clot, it may be that the placenta is being clogged up by these clots and therefore not able to progress, or that the initial interface between the embryo and the mother never occurs because that her blood vessels are unable to carry the blood all the way to the embryo. When we do blood tests and find that increased coagulability, clotting, and those results suggest an abnormality, we are increasingly using aspirin, which is a blood thinner, or more aggressively, injections of compounds that cause the blood to thin. The use of Clexane and Fragmin have become used in couples where repeated IVF failure has occurred. The other, again, not a common cause of IVF failure, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier about genetic abnormalities, is that one or other parent may be a carrier of a chromosome abnormality. These are called translocations. They don't affect the parent, but when that translocation is handed on to the child or the embryo, it can cause miscarriage or failure to implant. So doing chromosome testing on parents is a mandatory part of investigation of failed implantation. Because that risk is about 1 in 500, some clinics will actually undertake chromosome assessment at the first visit just to make sure that we don't go through an IVF cycle and not get it wrong. So as I started this talk, I said that discussing failure in an IVF cycle is sadly one of the most common things that I do on my day in the clinic. We try to understand what the problems are, but in most cases, unless we can do genetic testing or we find one of these immunological or hematological problems, we're left really in an unknown area. That said, what one has to realize is that that chance of success that we talk about, the 30 to 40% chance, continues unless there is a major issue with the parents or the uterus. So that the more a couple tries, the more likely they are to produce a pregnancy. And the data clearly shows this. We're just about to publish an article, hopefully, in the Medical Journal of Australia, which shows that if you are under the age of 40 and you keep trying, and that can mean 4, 5, 6 or more attempts, at the end of the time, 75% of couples will end up with a baby. So my message is probably don't give up on your first failure. Keep trying, because the odds are ultimately on your side. And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.